Well, this podcast episode is really quite special. I knew that interviewing Katrina Ruth would be great. I didn't know quite how great it was going to be. This is really quite profound. So tune in, have a listen to Katrina Ruth talking with me about following your soul and doing really big things in the world that are bigger than you. It's a good one. Tune in. Katrina Ruth, you absolute legend. Welcome. This is so exciting. I love talking to you anytime about anything. So I'm pumped. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this. I just know that you bring the soul flow, obviously, and I just know I'm going to walk out of this conversation expanded and lit up for my day, which I need because I had a really shitty night's sleep. So I'm here for the flow, but I'm here to deliver the flow as well and let it come through.
We will co-create the flow. I love it.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. So this is for my podcast. I'm live streaming it as well onto my page, but this is part of a series. I'm interviewing the four most inspiring women I know around anything to do with money and wealth. And I know this conversation will go in all sorts of directions, I think probably besides money, because there's so many things you represent to me. You obviously are someone who has for such a long time consistently generated incredible levels of income in your business, but so much more than that. You've built such an amazing legacy. There are so many people, like you come across someone online and you're like, I know you've worked with Katrina Ruth. Like you can just see it. You can feel it in their energy. And I remember watching so many people, I came across them because they were working with you. They'd posted about you and then watching them just go crazy online, like just with this incredible content. And so I'd love to, for this interview, if it works for you, to just maybe share some of the things that you have taught me and some of the things that you've represented to me. And may I just love you to expand on that and just kind of, you know, as you do, pour forth the the cat vibes like lava.
Just vomit the badassery out. Whatever needs to come out. Yeah, definitely.
And that's probably one of the biggest things I think that you have represented to me is that is like unapologetically, boldly saying truly what is on your heart day after day, not necessarily thinking about will this sell? Will they like it? Are people going to come with pitchforks if I say this, which I'm sure at times they pretty much have. Yeah. And I'd love to hear a bit about your experience with that because I think so many people are so freaking terrified to say what they really think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing around that is, and it speaks to so many other aspects of doing your true work in the world as well. What I'm about to say is, yeah, it definitely is relevant to what you just said about, I guess, fear or reality of people coming at you with pitchforks on the internet. But it's relevant to everything. It's relevant to the mission. It's relevant to that you actually let the true magic out and the supernatural flow of what's in you, that it gets to come to life. And it's so relevant to whether you're going to make the money and the impact that you know you're here to make. This what I'm about to say really is the tipping point of everything in many ways. And it has to do with being responsible to the work. And one of my mentors put it as responsibility to the mission. Just recently I heard him say that. And for years I've spoken around this without using that word mission, which I really liked because it kind of takes it to that higher level of, you know, reality that this is not about you. And that's something that I've taught on for years and that I had to learn myself. And I think when you're called to share a message or your art or something that's inside of you with the world, which obviously is you, is me, is I presume pretty much everybody that's going to watch this or listen to it, you've had that calling in you since before time began. You know, as long as you can remember, you knew that you were different. You knew as well that you had something extraordinary that you were going to do in the world. And I remember being so young and just kind of becoming aware of, I guess, my friends, like other kids, you know, conversation or, you know, possible plans for life and the pathway of life. And I just remember from such a young age thinking, yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm not going to do that whole normal get a job thing. And you know, sometimes I would think, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. That was a big part of my life pathway, actually. So it was like I was in these two parallel worlds where it was like, be the good student, get the grades, become the lawyer, be a good girl, be the teacher's pet, be super academic, all parts of me. And then at the same time, the whole way through, I just knew, there's something inside of me that has to come out. Now, obviously, I couldn't articulate that as a child or even in my 20s. It wasn't until well into my 30s that I really clearly began to articulate that. But long before I did, and long before I understood it to where I can obviously now teach on it and do, I was already doing it. And I think it's like there's a homing pigeon, that, you know, the homing beacon or something that's calling you home. When you're this kind of person, you're continually being led and guided towards it. You're continually being pulled in the direction of following that soul flow. And without even knowing what you're doing, it's just, yeah, it's this magnet that's pulling you in. So I think long before you recognize it as the work and the thing that is not about you and the thing that is a mission and the thing that there's a responsibility to get out into the world, long before you can articulate any of that, you already knew and you were already being called. When it comes time to, I guess, clearly start to put yourself out there on the internet or off or in business, and to make a conscious stand to stand for who you really are and what you're here to do in the world, and essentially to wave that flag and say, hey, this is me and this is what I'm here to do, and to start actually saying those things that are inside of you, and then to be audacious enough to think that you can package and position what's inside of you and monetize it and teach it to others. Like, there's so many different things here that we're touching on already that obviously bring shit up. But one of the things that happens along that journey of finally truly saying yes, that this is not just going to be a thing inside of me, a thing that makes me feel different, strange, that I don't fit in, excited, all the different things, but this is going to be my business, where my money comes from, part, a big, you know, known part of my identity. It's no longer a thing inside of me that I'm living with every day and that nobody else really knows is in me except for other people who are like us and pick up on it. It's now going to be the thing, the deepest, most vulnerable, most real part of me that I take out bloody and raw and open to attack and say, here you go, world, do what you want with it. Like, how fucking scary is that, right? So obviously we all in going through the process of getting to that point have stuff come up where we suddenly realize what we're opening ourselves up to. And we've been usually unconsciously realizing it for a long while before that. And depending on the person, if you directly have had family members or influential people in your life attack you or tell you that you're too much or too this or wrong or you can't do that or whatever, depending on the trauma that already exists around that, it can be just the most terrifying thing that's ever happened. And even if you've had a really supportive upbringing and you've been surrounded by people that you tell you that you can do whatever you want and all that good stuff, it's still fucking scary because it's the reality of, as I said, exposing those deepest, most raw parts of you. So the thing that I came to realize and learn and understand over time, and that helped me, was to start to realize, as I've mentioned, it's not about me. It's about my responsibility to the work. Now, I think we all know that long before we know that. And that's why we can't not do it. We can't not be that person. We might have tried along the way to stuff it down and like make it appropriate and box it in and pretend that you're a normal person. You know, sometimes even now I walk around the streets and I'm having like a small talk conversation with somebody, maybe in a store or maybe at the school or whatever. And I find myself thinking in the back of my head, how amusing, this person thinks that I'm a normal person. Or I feel like proud of myself. I'm like, wow, I'm doing such a good job of not showing my weirdness or showing like the level of freak show that's actually in here. So it's always been there, but yeah, to actually consciously put it out, and not just to put it out like sneak it in, like let me just drop this here and hopefully nobody really notices but somehow still pays me, but instead to really plant that flag, really wave that banner, really say, this is who I am. This is what I'm here to do. And I'm going to preach the good fucking word that comes out of me. What does that require? Well, it obviously requires audacity. It requires courage. It requires trust. It requires faith. It requires surrender. It requires all these things. But it also requires, and now I'm finally going to wrap this point up and bring it back to where I said this is huge. It requires that you see it as a responsibility to do the work that you came here to do. And to realize it's about the work, it's not about you. Now, obviously, the work is filtered through and from you. You're the vessel, you're the one who transmits, downloads, etc. So work can't exist without you. But that's the point. The work can't exist without you, but yet it's there in time and space. It hasn't been transmitted or translated down into the physical realm yet. but it exists. And you're, if you're not being responsible to it, if you're making it that your fears of what people say on the internet or whether or not you're good enough or how or whatever, if you're making that stuff bigger than the responsibility to bring that work to life, then you're saying to it as it floats around in the quantum or wherever it's at, no, no, you don't get to exist in this world. You gotta stay over there. Sorry, too bad. You're like murderer. It's horrible. It's irresponsible. So not murderer, I guess it still gets to exist wherever it's at. That's extreme. But this helps me. It helps me to see it as a responsibility and to realize it's not about me. So if you take me, for example, you know, you've coached with me privately, you've seen sides to me as a private client that not everybody sees in terms of, I guess, the level of vulnerability or, you know, I don't know, maybe awkwardness, introvertedness, whatever, introspection. A lot of people on the internet who have not got to know me so closely see, I guess, the more overt, obvious parts of me. And I'm sure this is true with you as well. And with a lot of people listening and watching, people label you, go, oh, okay, Kylie, she's this, she's so confident, she's so sure of herself, she's such a, you know, incredible gifted author and writer and coach. And people tend to assume that you've just got it all together all the time, and they logically know that you're human and that you therefore must have human doubts and fears and emotions and so on, but they just don't see that. They see that you got your shit together, you got it going on, whatever. And people see these things about me as well, and they see, you know, she's hardcore or a badass or, you know, so sure of herself, confidence again, and so on and so forth. But meanwhile, what people don't always realize about those who they learn from and are inspired by is for that person to get to that point, they had to consciously choose to let the work be bigger than their own bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it was a conscious choice, and maybe it was an unconscious choice and a calling before that. But at some point there has to be that line in the sand moment, which is, and this for me is what it was, I will give my life for this work, because what I'm doing is I'm giving my life for what my life was given to me for. And I say this to my clients a lot, are you willing to give your life for the thing that your life was given to you for? And there's so much we could unpack around that, you know, in terms of surrender and money and the fact that it's about the work and it's not about the money or the results or whatever, but I'll put that aside because I guess, yeah, to sum all that up, it makes it simple. It makes all of it so simple. It makes it so simple to know what to say, what to create, what to sell it, how to share your message, how to unapologetically stand up in the face of, people not liking what you say, or worse than that, people, you know, perhaps potentially attacking you or bad-mouthing you or whatever. Any and all of it, it just makes it so simple. If you see it as your mission, your responsibility, I must do the work that I'm here to do. I've committed to that. I soul contracted with it. It wasn't an airy fairy commitment. And that's something I suggest for everyone, to soul contract with your true work. And so therefore I must do it. And that's how I look at it. It's not about me. If I feel whatever, or yeah, I'm, I don't know, scared, vulnerable, tired, whatever it might be, it's about, but are you going to do your job, Kat? Are you going to be responsible to the work? Now, I'm still going to be human. I'm still going to have times where I do hide out, or I, you know, stay in bed all day, or I don't say something that I wanted to say. I definitely still do that. God, in the last year, there's been plenty of times where I've not said something I wanted to say because I've felt into, well, is that actually part of my mission to talk about that? Is that actually truly aligned? But I'll tell you, if I know something's coming through me that's part of what I'm here to do and I don't do it, I couldn't live with myself. And I don't mean that conceptually. I mean, it will impact how I'm living right now. I will feel pent up, sad, frustrated, contracted. I'll probably binge eat on a bunch of crap. I'll probably be cranky at my kids more. I'm not going to be who I'm meant to be. Like, it directly impacts my physical self and my physiology and all the other parts of me as well. And then on a bigger level, I just am not going to do that. I contracted with my own soul that I'll give my life to what it was given to me for. And I think that was the best decision I've made in business, because it took the thinking out of it. And that was years ago when I made that commitment, when I started to understand this stuff. It was late 2013 that I made that as a clear soul contract commitment to myself. And since then, of course, I have my ups and downs and hurdles and human as fuck moments and whatever, but it's just easy because you just bring everything back to, but what is my responsibility here?
Yeah. And I think sometimes the confusing part can be that that kind of evolves. Like, you know, if you were like, I don't know, I don't want to do coaching anymore, or I don't want to do courses anymore or something. And it can feel like, yeah, but I sort of committed to do that. I'd love to hear a bit about how you let the work evolve, like let the mission reveal itself to you, like what you're here to do. Cause it, like, it evolves, right? Like it doesn't look the same as it did years ago necessarily.
Right. And that's a great point, because a lot of people like us often feel bad about themselves for failing to follow through on so many things. It's very common with us. I was always the person that didn't follow through. In fact, when one of my two marriages ended, they both ended. Now I'm back together with my second husband, the father of my kids, as you know, and as many people might know. But when one of my marriages ended, he said to me, well, of course, because you walk away from everything, don't you? You don't follow through. You don't follow through on anything. You walk away from your coaches. You walk away from your best friends. You walk away from every business idea or project you have. You don't follow through on anything. You walk away from everything. And I didn't really have anything to say, because I was like, true. I walk away from everything in the end. Not everything. I have some friendships that are like decades long, and I have coaches as well that have been in my life now for a decade or so. But I walk away from a lot of things. And before I, you know, found my groove with my business and understood what I now teach, you know, my business has been an evolution over 15 years now of marketing online. And I was in business before coming online. So it's been about a 20-year evolution now of business. Before I really got into, yeah, dropping in, I guess, I felt so like, I never follow through. Why do I keep backing out of things? I make all these commitments, and then it just gets to a tipping point where I'm like, I just can't do it. I just can't. Like, I would go through a period where I'm feeling withdrawn, where I'm not feeling the vibe anymore with the thing or the person or whatever. And then I would go through that period where you try and force yourself and like discipline and willpower, and I'm going to do it. Let's go. And then you get to a gradual point where you're like, fuck, I think I'm going to have to walk away from this thing. And then you get to the eventual point where you're like, I cannot look at this thing for another fucking moment. And if I don't leave, I will rip the whole world apart. And then you leave and you blow shit up and you feel bad. But what happens after that, hey? Usually some kind of breakthrough, download, huge up level, expansion, deeper dropping into self and soul. So eventually I realized I am the person that walks away from so many things. But the thing I never walk away from is following soul and truth. That's what I follow through on. So if I make a commitment of how I'm going to do my coaching or a particular project that I'm going to bring to life or anything that I said I'll do, I mean it in that moment. I don't make commitments that I don't mean in that moment. But in the end, I will follow soul. I will follow what's inside of me. If that means I need to walk away from something I did commit to, or that I truly believed I was going to follow through with, then it's not always comfortable and it's not always understood by other people, you know, because of course it can look irresponsible, reckless, whatever. But my highest commitment is to God, life, soul, in that order. And my own self, my own true self, my own spirit planted in the truth of how I see life and God and the cosmos, all of it, right? So that's what I'm going to be responsible to. That's where my actual commitment is. Everything's run through that filter. So, you know, I don't make commitments without running them through that filter and checking in, but I make it with an understanding that things evolve and shift, and I don't see it as failure to follow through or that you walked away from something or shut something down or whatever. I see it as, hey, we're all on this journey together cosmically. Whoever's in my space as a client or a follower online or a friend or anyone, we're on the same journey together. In order for us to remain on that journey and in the river of flow, so to speak, well, we have to continue to be true to the flow. So if that means how our friendship evolves is different to what we thought it would be, or our coaching arrangement or our practical side of our business or our relationships or anything at all, well, as long as we know we're being responsible to what we're meant to be responsible to, then we're making the right decision. And so we can only have the belief that it's for the greater good of everything and of all people who are coming into contact with us.
Love that so much. It's such a thing for so many people. You said something recently to me in a session. You may or may not even remember it, but it was about like holding yourself back. Like when you are really connected to that, to soul, and you know your mission here is big, right? And you were talking about like it's like trying to hold the brakes on a steam train. Like it's actually harder to hold yourself back than to kind of let it happen.
Yeah.
Let it flow. I'd love to hear a bit more from you around that, because it just felt like such truth in my body when you said it.
Yeah. And I think so many people are not yet at a point of being tuned in enough or to have the discernment to actually be conscious of that, because so many people genuinely feel like it's so hard and scary to follow spirit, follow soul, follow that flow, and to say yes to what's inside of them. That feels like the more difficult pathway. And so they can, you know, there's like that story, like the Pilgrim's Journey or whatever it's called. And, it, you know, it's a very old story that's very powerful, to do with choosing essentially the wide, open, narrow, easy pathway in life, which essentially leads to not much, like leads to what everyone else has got and, you know, conformity and so on. Or do you want to choose the, you know, narrow, difficult, scary, scrubby, overgrown, hard pathway that's ultimately, you know, the moral of the story is that that's kind of the pathway to choose to get to the destination of truth in God, in life and soul, et cetera, and your purpose and, you know, being in your ultimate state of beingness. So people see it that way. They're like, this is more natural. That feels like flow, to follow along with essentially the flow that they're following. It is a form of flow, but the flow that they're following is the flow of, you know, the most dominant circles that they move in, whether that be they're following the flow of their Facebook feed, gosh, but that's the truth for a lot of people, or their local community or their upbringing or their religion or whatever it might be. And so, of course, that feels natural. It feels easy. It feels like, well, this is the pathway. Like, this is natural. This is more automatic. And that's what I'm going to keep going and doing. And look at this beautiful wide open pathway. And that one over there is like fucking hard and messy and scary looking, and how to, like, why would I even do that when everyone's over here? Where is it even going to lead me? But yet you feel pulled there all the time, and then you go, oh, I can't, it's too hard, or I don't know how, or whatever. Well, the truth for those of us who have begun the journey of saying yes to soul, let alone those of us who are well into that journey, as you and I are and many people here, I'm sure, the truth is that that hard pathway becomes the easy pathway, because it's the pathway of truth. But there can be so much resistance and fear and doubt and essentially seduction from fear or from the devil that pulls you away from that pathway and really makes you believe in a surface sort of manner that that's the hard pathway. But if you put aside those surface beliefs and thoughts and you went deeper within, you freaking know that that's the pathway. And that's the pathway where it opens up, like you open the portals to receiving, to abundance, to flow, to support from God, from life, from the fabric of the cosmos itself. Like, all of that steps up for you and things become done because of who you're choosing to be, as opposed to over here where it's do. Basically, you're being a donkey carrying shit along for your whole life. Maybe you're a great donkey, well done, but you're not in the magical, you know. So the more that we say yes to the magical and the internal and essentially just answer the call is what we're talking about, whether or not it makes sense, and oftentimes it won't, the more that we drop in and we receive the benefits of that, you know. And you can get that even in the space of an hour of saying yes to soul and saying yes to answering a call that seems like it makes no sense, or that it's reckless, you know, or irrelevant to where your day is meant to be going. But then what do you receive? You straight away start to receive. You receive expanded energy. You feel more of yourself. You maybe get some downloads and transmissions, ideas, little nudges, excitement. You feel empowered. And then what most people do, they experience some flow like that, maybe by being here or coaching with somebody like yourself or like me, or reading something, or, you know, doing their own work or whatever. And then what do? They go, oh, I don't have time to do more of that. And like, that's taking me off path, or it's wasting my time, or how is that going to get me to where I want to go? Or I'm being irresponsible, I'm being reckless, I'm not being organized, I'm not being a proper person. And so then they go back to the obvious, wide, supposedly easy pathway. Whereas if you would keep answering that call, and that's why I said before, having the commitment, the soul contract, like if you just have a commitment around it, it's kind of like, too bad. Those are the policies. Like, did you read the company policy? The policy is we follow soul. So too bad. You signed. Like, I have your signature. It's on fucking DocuSign. You're done. You got to keep going that way. That's how I see it. Because the more that you say yes to that and embody being that person who operates from trust, the more you continue to find that through that, you know, scrubby, narrow, messy looking pathway, is, you know, the most beautiful heavens and field and just receiving of all the things, and it just opens up. And so you continue to get that positive affirmation, feedback, and actual real world practical receiving of whatever it might be. And so it becomes more and more like, how could I not? You know, no, you're still going to be human. You're still going to have days or moments where you're like, fuck, I've got to be over here doing this and I don't have time for that soul shit right now. But you'll more and more have the discernment to notice. Like, you might jump into your day and jumping into busy work and into doing, and you'll just catch yourself and you'll just play it out and you'll go, hang on a second, I could give in to reacting, responding, conforming, doing what's meant to be done, and I could have an accomplished day or week or life that way. But let me just fast forward to the outcome of that. What's the natural outcome of that? The natural outcome is the pathway of having to do things will never fucking end, and I'll be on that pathway for the rest of my entire life, and that will be my life. Yes. Or I can see into the other option of, if I said yes to following what's inside of me, what does my past experience, however great or small around that, tell me is going to happen? What does my soul say? What is the truth that I know, even if I've not personally experienced or embodied it a whole lot? But what do I believe as I listen to Kat and Carly, as I listen to anyone else, as I listen to my own truth? And what actually is logical here? You know, like, logical is a very open to interpretation sort of statement. To me, it's wildly illogical to follow what most people consider to be logic, because their logic is made up of conditioned beliefs and dominant thought patterns in whatever consciousness they're predominantly moving within. How is that logical? True logic is to go deeper, to connect in, to operate from that place, and to allow yourself to let go in that place, which is just essential as a creator, as an artist of any kind. Otherwise, what the fuck are you creating? Some sort of rehash of the dominant pathway of other people that you're, you know, stuck in, essentially, which is what a lot of people are doing. So over here, yeah, it's more, well, that actually makes sense, because I just know that that's where the true work's going to come from, the answers, the opening up, and I just trust. So I suppose it all comes down to, are you willing to trust that deep? And if yes, are you willing to trust that deep finitely, absolutely, not conditionally?
Oh, man, you are the easiest person in the world to interview.
I'm sorry, I just never stopped talking. Like, it's, you have to actually cut me off. But you're opening up amazing transmissions from me. So it's just your energy, because I don't always go so deep at all.
Oh, that's so good. I love that. I think a lot of people who follow you or work with you have, they can recall their Katrina Ruth moment, right? And for a lot of people I know who've been around a long time, it is the you selfish bitch post. You did this post called that. And for a lot of people, this post was like, whoa, okay, I'm paying attention to this woman now. And for me, I came a little bit later. And my Katrina Ruth moment was, the first one was probably, I just heard you say the words, you were launching, I think, Born to be a queen, something, you're on a throne, you're on this hot pink throne.
Yeah, born to and be a queen. Just got rid of that throne last week.
Oh. And you said it was the simplest thing in the world, but it was just like, well, of course I'm just going to be me. Who the fuck else am I going to be? Like, it just was, I was like, fuck, of course, like, just be yourself. But probably my big Katrina Ruth moment was, you were running this event, you were standing up, there was all these people in the room, you're standing up the front, and you said something about, remember when you would go to camp? And I share this story a lot, and I say that you said it, where you, remember when you go, like, you go to camp and there's like the camp leaders and they've all got a different colored flag. Like, you've got to wave your flag so your people can go, oh, that's my person. And yeah, I just love that. Like, if you're not standing up there waving your flag being you, then how the fuck are your people supposed to find you?
Right. Was that the event where I was wearing like a gold bodysuit and I was standing on a chair? I stood on a chair waving my tripod in the air. I turned complete psychopathic. That was at an Inner Circle event in LA with my private, like, my 12-month mastermind clients, well, ongoing private clients in my Inner Circle. Oh, my God, that was one of the best trainings I've ever taught in my life, but I was so fucking high on my own internal superflow supply. I was off my head. And we were in these really, this really, and I mean, just off my head on superflow, if anyone's not clear, it wasn't anything external. I've actually never taken any drugs. I've got enough inside of me. Imagine I'd be out of control. anyway, it was in this quite like genteel, sort of kitschy, quirky, but very high class hotel in LA where we were staying and I was hosting the event. And I was shouting. I was on that chair. I was screaming. I was fucking preaching fire. And the waiter or the server, sorry, came in and was just like they would have heard me all through the lobby. But anyway, that was such a powerful download for me that day. That was where I like first, you know, a lot of my best teachings and analogies come through first when I'm live teaching, and then I take it and it becomes a training point, which is what happened with that. And it was exactly as you said, to do with the fact that your soul people who you're here to impact and serve obviously already exist in the human physical sense. They're already born for the most part, like for sure. Some of them have maybe not come to this world as of yet, but a lot of them are already here. Most of them are here. It's not like they're brand new people that have to be made in order for you to then have the clients or the audience or whatever you want. They exist. And secondly, you have an energetic tether to those people already. You know, like I don't remember when you and I first connected at all, but I know that from the first time you were consciously in my awareness, I knew you were a soul person for me and vice versa. And I knew you would become a private client ultimately, and that took however long it took, but it's not like I was ever like, hey, Carly, what's up? Here's my pitch. Like I just knew that you're going to become a client at some point along that journey, which is how it often is. And this is true with clients, with friends, with anyone, right? We all have that experience where we meet someone and you're like, well, obviously I always knew you since before time began. Well, it's not just the thing, like there's already an energetic connection there. And when you're in the flow that you're meant to be in, when you're being carried along by the current that you're meant to operate in, then your ideal clients, friends, anybody exists in that current with you, which is why when you operate like this, as you and I do, your clients just roll up into your DMs and they're like, hey, how much is it? Cool, I'll pay now. You don't do really anything else. You're just being you, because they're in that same current. Whereas most people are running on the riverbank alongside the current, like fighting their way continually through the bushes and scrub and so on. And they see their clients exist. They're like, why can't I like get more clients or explain to people what I really do or convince them to come into my space or whatever? And then they're like, why can't I get more of these clients and people, you know, like how do I get them? How do I convince them? How do I explain it? And it's like, dude, seriously, they're in the current. Like that's where the energetic tether and connection exists, in that flow, in that current. So if you're over there operating outside of the beat of your own life, you're not in that current, like fuck, how do you actually, like this makes no sense. You're literally trying to get something that exists here by being here. What is that? Why don't you just jump into the freaking river and into the flow, and then you'll be there all together like, hey, how are you? Let's have a Mai Tai. Let's keep flowing along together. Super easy breezy. And it sounds very, yeah, la-di-da, but that's how it works. We all who play at this level know that that's how it works. We sometimes forget it, but we do know it. So the thing is with that energetic cord, it already exists between you and all your soul people. So then when you meet a true soul person, you know you already knew them, and you instantly just become, you just drop into that sync together. However it is, it might be a friendship, might be mentor mentee, which usually if it's a soul person then becomes a friendship anyhow, and so on and so forth. Which means if we know that the energetic tether already exists and we accept this, which I'm going to just assume for everyone that they accept it, then it means that we can already pull on that. It's a cord. There's a connection there. We can send out on that frequency, on that channel, essentially, we can send a message out anytime. We already have that connection. It's not like when you met the human person that you only then just connected for the first time and that you then have to explain to them who you are, what you do, why they should buy. You might still say that stuff because why would you not? You're going to share that, obviously. But you can pull on those cords anytime to call your entire soulmate audience in if you just desire a bigger audience, or maybe you desire a few specific one-on-one clients, you can just pull them in, or anyone else at all, whatever it is you want. Those connections exist. You have an open line of communication already. So when I taught that training, what I was teaching about was how to communicate on that open line of communication. And I was making the point that I don't remember that I said camp. I thought I was talking about like when you're on a trip and you go to like the Vatican, for example, which I've been to a few times, and you go with your little tourist group and it's so packed because there's so many people. And then your tour guide, leader lady or man or person or whatever has a flag with like they got their red flag on top. These dudes over there have got a white flag or whatever. And so then whenever she stands up and waves her flag in the air, you obediently trot off over there because you know that that's your little group and your group's about to move on and you better go. You're going to be lost in the freaking Vatican in the labyrinth and it will be some Dan Brown bullshit that will be scary. So you just go with it, right? And the point is you can do that anytime for your soul people. You can wave your flag, but if you don't, then they're lost in the sea of masses. And they might be looking for you. They know that they're connected, that they're meant to be with that group, with you, but you're not waving the flag. How are they going to see you when there's so much shit going on? And what are you doing? You're over there in the corner, I don't know, rehashing somebody else's content. I don't mean copying. I'm just saying whatever version of not really putting your true work out and then expecting without waving that flag, without saying, hey, badass revolutionary leaders who know that they were born to do something extraordinary and are willing to do what it takes to be unapologetically all that they are, we're over here. Come on over. And when you do that, they just come on over. They just do. How do you do that? It's mainly an intention. It's pretty much that you get on an interview like this or a live stream of your own or a blog or your book or whatever it is you bring to life. And you just let the work come through you. You don't try and tell the work what to do because that's weird and ridiculous. And your job is not to tell the work what to do. It's not to edit it, filter it, or critique it. It's just to let it through. So it's mainly that you have that intention. The way I do it is pretty much two steps. I will just claim what it is that I'm wanting to call in, like to pull on the tether of. I might write it in my journal or say it in my head or whatever, right? I'm just claiming it somewhere that, you know, more aligned one-on-one clients are coming into my space, for example, and they're rolling into my DMs. And I would usually specify exactly how it works and what happens. Like I'm putting my order into the universe. And then what I would do is I would go forth with the presumption, the true presumption, that of course when I just wave that flag, which just means be me and let whatever comes through come through, then they're going to see it, hear it, they're going to feel it. And they're going to obediently trot over just like I did when I'm on a Vatican tour. Yeah. And people say to me all the time, I have no idea how I find you. You just kind of popped into my news feed out of nowhere. And I was like, who is this chick and why is she like, I don't know, so crazy or whatever. And I couldn't stop watching. I'm like, I don't know how you found me because I was waving the flag. I was pulling you in energetically. I was putting out on a, yeah, like I was putting it out on the right frequency, essentially. I was putting out what needed to come out and it just called you in. I just called you in. That's what happened. Oh, okay, but did you market or run ads or whatever? Well, yeah, sure, sometimes. But that's just a vehicle to do what I'm doing.
Oh, I love it. We're at the 40-minute mark. I could ask you questions all day long, but I won't. I'm going to throw one more really quick one at you. Is self-sabotage a thing? It's a thing that's talked about a lot. Or is it just you're not connected to your soul?
That's a great question that I don't think anybody's asked me before. Mm. All of these questions were completely unique, actually. But, well, sure, it depends what lens you're looking through, right? Like if you were looking through a purely physical world lens, of course you could say I sabotaged because I did this numbing or binging or addictive behavior, or because I stopped or didn't do this thing that I knew I was meant to pursue. So that's a sabotage, but there's always so much more to it, isn't it? It's like, well, why did you need that? Why was that numbing out or binging or addictive thing or cycle? Why was that a gift? What was the gift in that? How did it save and serve you? And this is something I know quite a lot about from the perspective of I was bulimic for many, many years, well over a decade. And I got through that with like professional medical and psychiatric help as well as my own learning and understanding. But the woman that who I saw who helped me, who was a medical doctor and a psych, both of those, and a specialist with eating disorders, she explained it to me so clearly in the first session. She was like, you're trying to take control of your life in a life that feels off the rails and out of control. This is a way of you feeling in control in a life that's essentially not in alignment. I don't know if she used the word alignment back then. This is a long time ago. But, yeah, she taught me something that I guess I already knew, which was that I wasn't saying yes to soul and I wasn't being true to myself in so many ways. And so the addiction cycle and the, yeah, the eating disorder was my coping mechanism, a way of like red flagging myself. And whatever the thing is, there's always a deeper thing to it. You know, I ended up writing a book on that, on getting past binge eating, which is still my most best-selling book to this day, The Secret Life of a Binge Eater. But really, it speaks to so many addiction cycles and numbing cycles and so on. So there's that side of things where it's like, yeah, but okay, it's a self-sabotage, like doing that to yourself for so many years of your life. Like in some ways I can say I lost my entire 20s to that. That was my focus for my whole 20s. Like, when can I next be alone and eat and purge? So it feels really sad. But on the other hand, I'm like, whatever. Like, it was just calling me home. And I don't mean to be lighthearted or flippant about things that are so real and can be just so much more profoundly tragic, devastating than my experience, obviously. But there is always more to the story. And then if the self-sabotage is to not be doing the thing you're meant to be doing, like for years not doing your writing or your soul work or whatever it might be, playing small, staying within the cycle of success that you've already created but not branching beyond it, well, sure, it's a self-sabotage. And maybe, to be super cliche but true about it, maybe it's just the lessons that you need to learn in this lifetime, and maybe that's what you're here for right now on this planet. But I guess sometimes I would say that to people to be deliberately confronting to them, to be like, okay, cool, totally your choice. How long do you want to keep learning this same lesson for? Because you can keep learning it for the entire rest of your life, and that's fine. Maybe that's what you're here to do. And then they're like, fuck you, that's not what I'm here to do. I'm like, okay. Like, whatever. Either way is fine. One thing is not better than the other. It's not like more cosmically approved to do this than this. Do whatever you want. But you're choosing what you want. You're showing what you want. Don't make it bad or wrong. I think with things that we label as self-sabotage or destructive behavior, how does it ever serve to make it bad or wrong? You know, now obviously if something is like morally wrong for us, maybe we are going to label it wrong. I don't know. I can't say that for any other person except for myself. But overall, how is it going to serve you to shame and blame yourself to say, oh, I'm caught in a destructive self-sabotage cycle or something like that? Or am I caught in a cycle of, there's a gift in this that I actually need right now? And what if I looked at it that way and stopped denying or resisting parts of me and instead accepted or owned those parts and asked, what do you need? Like, what is it that's actually going on here? What is the lesson here that maybe I can drop in on now and then say, oh, okay, thank you, received, grateful, now I can let go. And that's how I let go of bulimia, because I was able to accept it, own it, love it, thank it. And then from that place, it was so easy to release. It was just an easy conscious choice. Like, it was shocking to me how rapidly I dropped that after having its claws in me for so many years. You know, it's still shocking to me in some ways. But because I owned it and allowed it and accepted it and made space for it and loved it first rather than before that, it was like, you're bad, you're wrong, you don't have enough willpower. If people only knew, you know, you should feel ashamed of yourself, you're not being a good human, you're stopping yourself from achieving or creating so many things that this is taking the time of, never mind, you know, it's preventing you from being in expansion. Well, that's all technically true. But I was never going to get through that to the other side by beating myself up over it. So I think whatever your sabotage is now for anyone, instead of being like, I have to fix this, heal it, cleanse it, all that, like it's quite harsh. Instead, what if you got curious would be a starting point. What if you stepped outside the situation for just a moment and looked at it as though it's, you know, like a physical object and you go, oh, this is just a James Patterson novel. Don't everyone freak out and try and read what it is. It's nothing extra profound. I'm not saying it's not profound. Haven't read it yet. I've got literally like 40 books within my arm's reach right now, always. What if you just picked it up and looked at it and like objectively like, oh, how interesting. Let's be curious about this James Patterson book, The Russian. Why is this here? How did this come to be in my space? Why did I choose this? And then, oh, well, all right, well, I chose it for whatever reason. Why am I continuing to choose it? Do I still want to choose it? Do I want to keep it here? Or does it just not really feel required anymore? And if so, then I can release it and I can just say, well, thank you and goodbye. And it's so clear and easy. Now, I'm not at all suggesting that trauma, addiction, any sort of mental health issue is that easy to let go of. I'm saying that's one piece of the puzzle that has helped me tremendously. Anything that's clinical, I believe, should also be dealt with clinically. medically, whatever it might be. I'm a big believer in all avenues, all together, all the time.
Seriously, every single minute of this has been gold. That was so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. You're extraordinary and wonderful. Everybody go find Kat all over the internet. I'll drop links, obviously. Kat, this will be up in the next couple of days. I'll tag you, of course. Thank you so much. I'm truly, deeply grateful. This was such a beautiful chat. So
it was so beautiful, and you gave me my flow just as I knew it happened. And I saw somebody commented on your live stream and said, "Kylie is the interviewer queen." Oh, that was Wendy. It's one of her geniuses.
Yes.
I'm so back in that because, this was an amazing interview. So thank you for being in the space of being fully you in order to allow me to go even deeper into that space myself. And thank you, everyone, for being here and gifting your energy as well.
So good. I interviewed Amanda recently and she told me that I should be the next Barbara Walters. I'm like, all right, I can. I like that.
Do it. Barbara from the bedroom.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Kat. I'll see you soon. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Love.